Please, God. Please, God, forgive me. I love my wife so much. She's everything to me. All I did was try to protect her.
This is 20-year-old Skyler Nemitz, an infantry soldier stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington. Skyler had just returned home from a 3-week training operation. But just hours after being reunited with his 19-year-old wife, Danielle, her deceased body was discovered by police in the couple's Lakewood apartment. Skyler would claim that Danielle had lost her life to what amounted to a tragic accident. But had it really been an accident? Or had something much more sinister occurred? Before we start, we would like to send our condolences to the friends and loved ones of Danielle Nemitz, who fell victim to the harrowing events described in this case. Born 7 weeks early on January 11, 1995, Tara Danielle Rippian was described as a miracle baby. Tara, who later went by her middle name, Danielle, had been born weighing just 3 pounds and was not predicted to survive the night. But Danielle had defeated those odds, and it was this inner drive and love of life that later would be remembered most by those who knew her. A flyer on the cheerleading squad, her teammates described her as a small stick of dynamite, owing to her petite frame and charismatic personality. But deep down, Danielle craved a sense of belonging. At just 2 years old, Danielle had lost her mother to cancer. She had been raised by her grandmother until the age of 14, when her grandmother also passed away. Danielle had moved in with her stepfather, Michael Bolton, but he had his own share of troubles to deal with. Her coach remembers Danielle seeking stability in the boys that she dated and their families. She'd later say she always got very close with the families of the boyfriends she had because they were the most stable part of her life. But it was just that need to be loved. During her final year of high school, Danielle met 20-year-old Skyler Nemitz on Facebook. Skyler had recently enlisted in the Army and was due to begin basic training in Georgia, but the pair soon embarked on a whirlwind relationship. Skyler later described it as a case of love at first sight. As for Danielle, within weeks, she was telling her friends that Skyler was the guy she was going to marry. None of this surprised those who knew her, but even by Danielle's standards, their relationship was moving fast. Skyler's mother, Danette Heller, remembers being taken aback when, just a month after the pair began dating, Skyler asked if Danielle could move in with them. Danette had some reservations, but eventually agreed. When Skyler returned from boot camp at their first Christmas, he took Danielle to the top of Neyland Mountain and proposed to her. She accepted. And just 3 months later, on March 7, 2012, the same day as Skyler's graduation from basic training, the couple married at the local courthouse. Within weeks, Danielle had left school and they had relocated to Lakewood, Washington, where Skyler had been assigned his first stationing at Fort Lewis. The couple seemed to have the kind of love that most people dream of. With Skyler's encouragement, Danielle completed her final year of education at a local high school before taking a job at a granite counter company. She aspired one day to open a nail salon and began posting makeup tutorials on YouTube. The couple adopted 2 dogs and made plans to travel the world together before starting a family of their own. And they shared another passion, firearms. A favorite date night activity for the couple was an evening at a local shooting range. Skyler had grown up around guns and had fired his first rifle when he was still a kid. He handled weapons every day as part of his job. By 2014, he had 15 different customized weapons in their apartment. When Danielle turned 19, Skyler presented her with a blue AR-15 that he had customized himself. But while things may have looked perfect from the outside, those closest to the couple knew differently. Michaela Yingling had been Danielle's best friend for years, initially bonding with her over their shared experience of losing their mothers at a young age. Michaela understood more than anyone Danielle's desire to belong. But she had had her reservations about Skylar from the start. He had taken Danielle away so quickly she never had a chance to get to know him, and he seemed to have no desire to involve her in their lives. When Michaela had been expecting her first baby, he had refused to let Danielle go home for the baby shower. During her regular FaceTime calls with Danielle, she noticed that her friend was often stressed about getting the house in order for him, right down to shampooing the carpets. Another lifelong friend of Danielle's, Samantha Minton, noticed Skylar's odd behavior. When the couple came home to visit, Skylar would leave Danielle at his parents' house while he went to see his friends alone. James Peltier, who had been a father figure to Danielle growing up, said, "I met him on three occasions. I think I shook his hand, and then he just went back to the car and left." According to James, Skylar made no effort to form any connection with the people closest to Danielle. When she confided in him that Skylar had smashed her phone during an argument, he asked Danielle if she was afraid of Skylar. Her reply had deeply concerned him. She said, "Only when he's been drinking." And that was just what her friends had seen as well. Neighbors would later say they heard the couple arguing on a nearly daily basis. Skylar, it seemed, was convinced that Danielle was being unfaithful to him. In one text, he had openly accused her of cheating with a childhood friend. Danielle wrote back, "You have either insecurities you need to work on, or you don't trust me when it comes to hanging out with Jeremy." And Skylar's issues extended beyond the remit of jealousy. He was infuriated if she spent any money without his permission and took to tracking her spending. On September 27, 2014, Skylar had left for a three-week-long field training operation in Yakima, Washington. Danielle stayed home with the couple's two-bedroom apartment and their dogs. No drinking was permitted during their training. Skylar had asked Danielle to have something ready for him when he returned and made a specific request: a bottle of Sailor Jerry rum and a bottle of Fireball whiskey. It was a seemingly innocuous request, but one that would become a major player in the events that would follow. On the morning of October 16th, Danielle FaceTimed with her best friend, Michaela. She was leaving shortly to pick Skylar up from the Army base, and she told her friend that she was excited to be reunited with her husband. She had already bathed the dogs and decorated the house with candles. At 4 p.m., she FaceTimed Michaela again. Michaela remembers Danielle sitting at her computer in their spare bedroom and seeing Skylar laying on the bed behind her. He smiled and waved hello. Just 12 minutes later, the following 911 call would be made by neighbors.
911, what are you reporting?
Hi, I think somebody was shot, our neighbors. We heard a lot of banging, our neighbors were making a lot of noise, and then what the check was, he said his rifle was out and there was an accident. He said her name's Danielle.
Danielle was the one that shot, and he accidentally shot her?
I don't know that part. We just heard the gun go off, and he said there's an accident.
Okay, is she breathing at all?
Is she breathing? Is she breathing?
No.
No.
And you said you don't know his name?
No, I don't.
Can you ask him his name?
What's your name? Skylar.
You hear someone screaming?
I'm their neighbor, and I heard a shot go off, and I wasn't sure if it was shot or anything else. The husband had said that she's dead, and he doesn't want me going in to see her. It was a accidental discharge because the round was in a rifle.
So the male told you that his wife is dead?
Yes.
Okay.
So she accidentally shot herself, is that correct? Or what you've been told,
Anyway? She accidentally shot herself. The husband did not want to talk about it. Okay. So we just need somebody here.
Yeah, we have been notified at some place from somebody else. Do you guys know where that rifle is now at all?
I didn't ask.
Skyler told his neighbors that Danielle had accidentally shot herself while cleaning her rifle. He would not let anyone see her and refused to talk to the 911 operator. Thomas Rodriguez, the chief of police for the town of Steilacoom, along with two other officers, were the first to arrive on the scene. In the spare room of the couple's apartment, he found Danielle sitting at her computer with her head slumped on one shoulder, a large pool of blood beneath her chair. She had been shot at close range in the back of the head and was pronounced dead at the scene. Outside, he found Skyler slumped on the bumper of his car. According to Rodriguez, Skyler's face was contorted and he was making sobbing sounds. But when he looked up at Rodriguez, his eyes were dry and he said, "I don't know why I can't cry." Skyler had already explained to Officer Daryl Moore that he had been taking the magazine out of his rifle when it had gone off against his leg, striking Danielle as she sat at her desk. He insisted that he had not seen the single bullet that was in the chamber of the rifle. This, however, was different from the account he had given to his neighbors, but it would just be the second account of many. Skyler repeated the story to Rodriguez. He said he had only shaken the rifle. I just shook it and it shot her. At 6:07 p.m., Skyler was arrested and placed in the back of a patrol car, where he was informed that he was being recorded on camera, both audio and visual. A morose and silent Skyler would then launch into a bizarre monologue that would last the entire journey to the police precinct, a full 35 minutes. Later, people would comment that Skyler's antics, at times he was sobbing, at other times shouting, seemed more like a performance than a genuine expression of grief. He also seemed to be able to snap out of his grief anytime an officer addressed him.
You call and come forward, just please be as patient as you can. So, okay? Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, sir, were you notified you're being audio and visually recorded?
That's fine. I'm not going to do anything.
Okay. Just so you know, you're on camera, okay? Have you been advised of your Miranda rights?
No.
Okay. Just hang tight, okay?
You know?
Once at the station, detectives would interview Skyler for nearly 5 hours.
So I took the rifle and I took the magazine out. I don't know what the fuck happened. Like, I didn't charge it. I didn't pull the trigger or anything. I hit the safety. I turned the safety from safe to semi because I was about to charge it to make sure it was clear. Even though when I gave it to her, I knew it wasn't around. So here, I think that when I was gone, she might have put a round in the chamber, maybe, not knowing what she was doing. And so I don't know what the fuck. I did not pull the trigger, and I didn't. The magazine was not on the weapon. I put the weapon on fire. It was on fire, so it had the probability of firing the weapon. And I don't know how the fuck it went off, but it went off.
Inconsistencies in his account began to appear immediately. Skyler first tells detectives that he left Danielle's rifle in the closet with the magazine far away from the rifle. Then he states that when he had decided to put the rifle back in the safe, he had begun by removing the magazine, the same magazine he had just said was kept far away from the weapon. Skyler is made to repeat his version of the events. With each reiteration, he loses a few details and introduces others. Now, it was Danielle who had asked him to put the rifle away.
30 minutes before this all happened, she took it from the closet into the bed, into the office.
Okay.
And she said, "I don't need this anymore, just put it away."
About one aspect, though, Skyler seemed certain. The moment the gun discharged, he demonstrates to detectives how he was moving the rifle when it went off. Detectives asked if they were going to find any digital forensic evidence that Skyler and Danielle were having marital problems. With Skyler's clothes taken away for forensic testing, detectives now confront him with the news that the trajectory of the bullet does not match his account of the events.
I really have no problem.
Because your story doesn't make sense. There's a huge fucking gap in your story. You're detailed all the way through up until the point where we had to talk to you for 2.5 hours to get you to realize that we're smarter than you think, and you shouldered a weapon because the fucking trajectory of that fucking round didn't match up. So immediately you changed the fucking story. That's about the 8th time you've done that. When your story, about 8 times, when your story doesn't make sense and you hear it for the 2nd time and we bring something up, you change the story. I'm trying to figure out why you put a gun to the back of your wife's head and pulled a trigger.
Skyler offers a revised version to the detectives, this time admitting that he not only pulled the trigger, but that it was no accident. He just didn't know the gun was loaded.
Me firing the weapon, or me pulling the trigger was not an accident. Okay? I did not know there was a round in there. Her getting hit with that round, it was an accident, and I was not mad, I was not angry.
Okay, so tell me what happened.
I was holding the weapon. I took the magazine out, okay? I took the fucking magazine out, I put the weapon on fire, and I pulled the trigger.
Seeking a motive, detectives now asked Skyler about a receipt found in the apartment for a dozen roses. Skyler sticks to his story that he pulled the trigger without intending to kill Danielle, but other witnesses were soon to come out of the woodwork. The day after Danielle's death, a woman named Carrie Foss turned up at the police station claiming to have information about the incident. Carrie was the wife of Anthony Foss, a friend and colleague of Skyler's. Carrie told police that throughout the time she had known the couple, Skyler had subjected Danielle to continual domestic abuse. Danielle had taken to wearing long sleeves to cover up the bruises up and down her arms. Carrie described Skyler as so controlling that at certain points, he had banned Danielle from even leaving their apartment. As for the co-worker whose wife had been the recipient of the roses, that had been Danielle's boss, Michael Newton. Carrie recalled Danielle telling her about Michael the first time that she had met him. Danielle confessed that she found him attractive, but that, as far as Carrie knew, had been the end of it. Not for Skyler, though. Skyler had been convinced that Danielle was having an affair with Michael. When Skyler had returned from training, he thanked Anthony for buying the alcohol, only to discover that it was Michael Newton who had bought it instead. Carrie described seeing Skyler visibly shaking with rage. Carrie had also told police that during the 3 weeks that Skyler had been away, Danielle had met up with an old school friend by the name of Jeremy Henry. She told Carrie about the meeting over text, and Carrie believed that her husband, Anthony, had seen the messages and told Skyler. Detectives now spoke with Anthony Foss. Anthony admitted that he had been aware that Skyler had been violent with Danielle, and that he and a former squad leader, Sam Phillips, had warned him that if it didn't stop, they would take action. Police then spoke to Danielle's boss, Michael Newton, as well as her old friend, Jeremy Henry. Michael explained that since Danielle was the company's first hire, and he was the manager, he had been in frequent contact with her, but their relationship had never been anything more than strictly professional.
So did the relationship become more than just a working relationship?
No, not at all.
Okay.
We never did anything together whatsoever.
In his interview with police, Jeremy Henry admitted the last time he'd seen Danielle was the previous Wednesday night.
So you said 2 times you spent the night in the last 3 weeks over there?
Yes, sir.
And you were over there Wednesday night prior, but you didn't spend the night?
No, sir.
Okay. Were you over there any other nights other than the 2 that you spent in the 3 weeks?
I went to the mall there one time.
Pierce County prosecutors now felt they had enough evidence to charge Skyler. Skyler had admitted to picking up an AR-15 and pulling the trigger while the rifle was pointed at the back of his wife's head. With the evidence of abuse, his failure to call 911, and his attempt to hide the evidence, prosecutors charged Skyler with first-degree murder of Danielle Nemitz. Skyler was held in the Pierce County Jail under a $1 million bond. Upon hearing the news, his mother, Danette, had sold her house, her car, and her jewelry to pay for his bond before hiring a top-notch defense attorney. While on house arrest in the lead-up to the trial, Skyler spoke to 48 Hours.
She doesn't have a car anymore. I mean, that's all because of me. And yet, at the same time, she wants to do this. I mean, I did have to explain to my mom that what I did was, you know, in the state of Washington, classified as negligence.
And then, a year and a half after shooting his wife, Skyler Nimitz went on trial. The prosecution presented the jury text messages between the couple that revealed their constant arguments. Skyler, they said, was someone with an in-depth knowledge of firearms. He had fired his first gun at the age of 4, his first AR-15 at 11, and by the time he was a teenager, he was building and assembling his own. Skyler could not possibly have made such a basic error as pointing a weapon at someone and pulling the trigger. A forensic scientist from the Washington State Patrol examined the weapon that had killed Danielle. He tested the functioning of the rifle and the cartridge and performed a trigger pull analysis. The results came back as typical for a firearm of that type. He stated that pulling the trigger with one finger would be comparable to lifting a 3/4 gallon of milk with one finger. Numerous witnesses testified for the prosecution against Skyler, claiming to have personally witnessed the evidence that he had abused Danielle. Finally, it was Skyler's turn to defend himself. Skyler's testimony closely echoed the story he had told police during his interrogation. This time, though, he added that he had screamed Danielle's name after shooting her, and that, if it hadn't been for his neighbors pounding on his apartment door, he would have taken his own life out of distress. When asked why he hadn't rendered any form of aid, he claimed that he already knew she was dead. The prosecutor probed Skyler about the alcohol use and why, instead of holding his dying wife, he had chosen instead to get rid of the evidence by flushing the alcohol down a toilet. To this, Skyler got emotional, telling the jury that he wished he had done things differently.
For some stupid apparent reason, I thought alcohol needed to be poured out, which is... it was completely stupid. I don't know why. If I could have done what I wanted, if I could go back and do what was right, I would have sat there and held her. And I would have prayed.
Skyler's fingers had allegedly been injured during the process of pulling the trigger. Prosecutors argued that the blood residues he had left around the apartment showed he had been in no hurry to get help or to answer the door to his neighbors.
He left a considerable amount of blood at various locations within this apartment after you were injured, correct?
I saw the pictures.
Correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's when it happened, correct?
As far as I know, I did not see the injury until I was in my interrogation. And I know that because in my interrogation, I see myself looking at it.
Did you just testify that you injured your finger in the firing of that weapon?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So we know that only after you fired the weapon would you have left a blood trail in that apartment, correct?
Yes.
All right. And among the areas that you left blood was what's called a spatter, I guess, technical term, but a significant amount of blood around the door frame of your bedroom, correct?
I believe so.
Okay. And we also know that you left a smear on the top of the refrigerator in the kitchen, correct?
Yes, I've seen that picture.
Okay, and you also left a smear by the slider, correct?
Yes, I've also seen that picture.
And that would positively indicate areas that you went before you ever answered the door, correct?
Yes, possibly.
Possibly? Did you go to the slider after answering the door?
I do not remember.
You don't remember?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You remember pulling the trigger?
No, I do not.
Don't remember that either.
In a closing argument to the jury, Skyler's defense attorney, Michael Stewart, reiterated Skyler's claim that the shooting of Danielle Nimitz had been unintentional. Skyler may be guilty of manslaughter, but not premeditated first-degree murder. The jury returned with a verdict on March 3, 2016, after 7 days of deliberation. Skyler was found guilty of manslaughter, but cleared of first-degree murder. The jury had not believed the state's case that Skyler had intended to kill his wife. Skyler Nimitz was sentenced to 13 and a half years in prison for the taking of the life of his wife, Danielle Nimitz. He will be free by 2029.